Chapter 19. Far as the eye could reach, the river had stolen from the higher tracts and broadened particles to the veil all this horizontal land, and now, exhausted, aged, and attenuated, lay serpentining along through the midst of its former spoils. Not quite sure of her direction, Tess stood still upon the hemmed expanse of verdant flatness, like a fly on a billiard table of indefinite length, and of no more consequence to the surroundings than that fly. The sole effect of her presence upon the placid valley so far had been to excite the mind of a solitary heron, which, after descending to the ground not far from her path, stood with neck erect, looking at her. Suddenly there arose from all parts of the lowland a prolonged and repeated call, "Ow! Wow! Wow!" From the furthest east to the furthest west the cry spread, as if by contagion, accompanied in some cases by the barking of a dog. It was not the expression of the valley's consciousness that beautiful Tess had arrived, but the ordinary announcement of milking time half past 4 o'clock, when the dairyman set about getting in the cows. The red and white herd nearest at hand, which had been phlegmatically waiting for the call, now trooped towards the steading in the background, their great bags of milk swinging under them as they walked. Tess followed slowly in their rear, and entered the barton by the open gate through which they had entered before her. Long thatched sheds stretched round the enclosure, their slopes encrusted with vivid green moss, and their eaves supported by wooden posts rubbed to a glossy smoothness by the flanks of infinite cows and calves of bygone years, now passed to an oblivion almost inconceivable in its profundity. Between the posts were ranged the milchers, each exhibiting herself at the present moment to a whimsical eye in the rear as a circle on two stalks, down the center of which a switch moved pendulum-wise, while the sun, lowering itself behind this patient row, threw their shadows accurately inwards upon the wall. Thus it threw shadows of these obscure and homely figures every evening with as much care over each contour as if it had been the profile of a court beauty on a palace wall, copied them as diligently as it had copied Olympian shapes on marble facades long ago, or the outline of Alexander, Caesar, and the pharaohs. They were the less restful cows that were stalled. Those that would stand still of their own will were milked in the middle of the yard, where many of such better behaved ones stood waiting now all prime milchers, such as were seldom seen out of this valley, and not always within it, nourished by the succulent feed which the water mead supplied at this prime season of the year. Those of them that were spotted with white reflected the sunshine in dazzling brilliancy, and the polished brass knobs of their horns glittered with something of military display. Their large veined udders hung ponderous as sandbags, the teeth sticking out like the legs of a gypsy's croc, and as each animal lingered for her turn to arrive the milk oozed forth and fell in drops to the ground. XVII, the dairymaids and men had flocked down from their cottages and out of the dairy house with the arrival of the cows from the meads, the maids walking in patterns, not on account of the weather, but to keep their shoes above the mulch of the barton. Each girl sat down on her three-legged stool, her face sideways, her right cheek resting against the cow, and looked musingly along the animal's flank at Tess as she approached. The male milkers, with hat brims turned down, resting flat on their foreheads and gazing on the ground, did not observe her. One of these was a sturdy middle-aged man whose long white inner was somewhat finer and cleaner than the wraps of the others, and whose jacket underneath had a presentable marketing aspect. The master dairyman, of whom she was in quest, his double character as a working milker and butter maker here during 6 days, and on the seventh as a man in shining broadcloth in his family pew at church, being so marked as to have inspired a rhyme, "Dairyman Dick all the week. On Sundays, Mr. Richard Crick." Seeing Tess standing at gaze, he went across to her. The majority of dairymen have a cross manner at milking time, but it happened that Mr. Crick was glad to get a new hand, for the days were busy ones now, and he received her warmly, inquiring for her mother and the rest of the family, though this as a matter of form merely, for in reality he had not been aware of Mrs. Durbeyfield's existence till apprised of the fact by a brief business letter about Tess.
"Oa, as a lad I know dear part o' the country very well," he said terminatively. "Tho I've never been there since. And a aged woman of 90, that used to live nigh here, but is dead, and gone long ago, told me that a family of some such name as yours in Blackmoor Vale came originally from these parts, and that we're a old ancient race that had all but perished off the earth, though the new generations didn't know it. But, Lord, I took no notice of the old woman's ramblings, not I."
"Oh no, it is nothing," said Tess. "Then the talk was of business only. You can milk 'em clean, my matey. I don't want my cow going azoo at this time o' year." She reassured him on that point, and he surveyed her up and down. As he had been staying indoors a good deal, and her complexion had grown delicate. "Quite sure you can stand it? 'Tis comfortable enough here for rough folk, but we don't live in a cowcomer frame." She declared that she could stand it, and her zest and willingness seemed to win him over. "Well, I suppose you'll want a dish o' tay, or victuals of some sort, hey? Not yet? Well, do as ye like about it. But faith, if 'twas I should be as dry as a keg's why travelling so far. I'll begin milking now, to get my hand in," said Tess. She drank a little milk as temporary refreshment to the surprise indeed, slight contempt of Dairyman Crick, to whose mind it had apparently never occurred that milk was good as a beverage. "Oh, if he can swallow that, be it so," he said indifferently, while holding up the pail that she sipped from. "Apostrophe 'tis what I ain't touched for years, not one. Rot the stuff, it would lie in my innards like lead. You can try your hand upon she," he pursued, nodding to the nearest cow. "Odd but what she do milk rather hard. We've hard ones and we've easy ones, like other folks. However, you'll find out that soon enough." When Tess had changed her bonnet for a hood, and was really on her stool under the cow, and the milk was squirting from her fists into the pail, she appeared to feel that she really had laid a new foundation for her future. The conviction bred serenity, her pulse slowed, and she was able to look about her. The milkers formed quite a little battalion of men and maids, the men operating on the hard-teated animals, the maids on the kindlier natures. It was a large dairy. There were nearly 100 milchers under Crick's management, all told, and of the herd the master dairyman milked 6 or 8 with his own hands, unless away from home. These were the cows that milked hardest of all, for his journey milkmen being more or less casually hired, he would not entrust this half dozen to their treatment, lest, from indifference, they should not milk them fully, nor to the maids, lest they should fail in the same way for lack of finger grip, with the result that in course of time the cows would, oh azoo that is, dry up. It was not the loss for the moment that made slack milking so serious, but that with the decline of demand there came decline, and ultimately cessation, of supply. After Tess had settled down to her cow there was for a time no talk in the barton, and not a sound interfered with the purr of the milk jets into the numerous pails, except a momentary exclamation to one or other of the beast requesting her to turn round or stand still. The only movements were those of the milker's hands up and down, and the swing of the cow's tails. Thus they all worked on, encompassed by the vast flat mead which extended to either slope of the valley, a level landscape compounded of old landscapes long forgotten, and, no doubt, differing in character very greatly from the landscape they composed now. "To my thinking," said the dairyman, rising suddenly from a cow he had just finished off, snatching up his three-legged stool in one hand, and the pail in the other, and moving on to the next hard yielder in his vicinity, "to my thinking, the cows don't guide down their milk today as usual. Upon my life, if Winker do begin keeping back like this, she'll not be worth going under by midsummer. 'Tis because there's a new hand come among us," apostrophe said Jonathan Cale. "I've noticed such things afore. To be sure. It may be so. I didn't think aught.
I've been told that it goes up into their horns at such times, said a dairymaid. Well, as to going up into their horns, replied Dairyman Crick dubiously, as though even witchcraft might be limited by anatomical possibilities, I couldn't say, I certainly could not. But as nut cows will keep it back as well as the horned ones, I don't quite agree to it. Do ye know that riddle about the nut cows, Jonathan? Why do nut cows give less milk in a year than horned? I don't, interposed the milkmaid. Why do they? Because there bain't so many of 'em, said the dairyman. Oh, some of her, these gamsters do certainly keep back their milk today. Folks, we must lift up a stave, or two, that's the only cure for it. Songs were often resorted to in dairies hereabout as an enticement to the cows, when they showed signs of withholding their usual yield, and the band of milkers at this request burst into melody in purely business-like tones, it is true, and with no great spontaneity, the result, according to their own belief, being a decided improvement during the song's continuance. When they had gone through 14 or 15 verses of a cheerful ballad about a murderer who was afraid to go to bed in the dark, because he saw certain brimstone flames around him, one of the male milkers said, I wish singing on the stoop didn't use up so much of a man's wind. You should get your harp, sir, not but what a fiddle is best. Tess, who had given ear to this, thought the words were addressed to the dairyman, but she was wrong. A reply, in the shape of I, came as it were out of the belly of a dun cow in the stalls. It had been spoken by a milker behind the animal, whom as he had not hitherto perceived. Oh yes, there's nothing like a fiddle, said the dairyman. Tito, I do think that bulls are more moved by a tune than cows, at least that's my experience. Once there was an old-aged man over at Millstock, William Dewey by name, one of the family, that used to do a good deal of business as tranters over there, Jonathan, do ye mind? I know the man by sight as well as I know my own brother, in a manner of speaking. Well, this man was a-coming home along from a wedding, where he had been playing his fiddle, one fine moonlight night, and for shortness's sake he took a cut across 40 acres, a field lying that way, where a bull was out to grass. The bull seed William, and took after him, horns aground, begged. And though William runned his best, and hadn't much drink in him, considering 'twas a wedding, and the folks well off, he found he'd never reach the fence, and get over in time to save himself. Well, as a last thought, he pulled out his fiddle as he runned, and struck up a jig, turning to the bull, and backing towards the corner. The bull softened down, and stood still, looking hard at William Dewey, who fiddled on, till a sort of a smile stole over the bull's face. But no sooner did William stop his playing and turn to get over hedge than the bull would stop his smiling, and lower his horns towards the seat of William's breeches. Well, William had to turn about and play on, willy-nilly, and 'twas only 3 o'clock in the world, and a knowed that nobody would come that way for hours, and he so leery and tired that I didn't know what to do. When he had scraped till about 4 o'clock, he felt that he verily would have to give over soon, and he said to himself, there's only this last tune between me and eternal welfare. Heaven save me, or I'm a done man. ... Well, then he called to mind how he'd seen the cattle kneel o' Christmas Eve's in the dead o' night. It was not Christmas Eve then, but it came into his head to play a trick upon the bull. So he broke into the Tivity Hymn, just as at Christmas carol singing, when, lo and behold, down went the bull on his bended knees, in his ignorance, just as if 'twere the true Tivity night and hour. As soon as his horned friend were down, William turned, clinked off. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.